Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
My name is Sam Campbell, and I'm part of the Coin.com digital team.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings.
On September 11th, 2001, I was 7 years old in first grade.
Fires burning, huge structures collapsing.
So aside from the teachers frantically leading us to be picked up early by our parents,
these acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat.
I don't have a lot of memories of the day.
These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve.
What I will always remember are the 20 years since. The global war on terror has lasted nearly my entire life.
I can hear you.
I've grown up in the post-9/11 world, and until now, I didn't really know the United States not at war.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan.
Now, the Coin Podcast Network is going beyond the headlines to bring you the stories from four local veterans. We'll talk about their connections to 9/11. The human costs of war. And after 20 years, where do we go from here? You'll meet Sergeant First Class Elizabeth Stewart, a senior culinary NCO in the Oregon National Guard.
Honestly, 9/11 is actually what made me want to join the military. I was a freshman in high school when it happened, and it was a really emotional day when I saw everything happening.
Lance Corporal Alex Danielli, a former civil affairs Marine.
We taught everything to the Army and police, how to shoot a gun, how to maintain a gun. But how do you teach self-esteem? How do you teach courage?
Navy cryptologist Jesse Scobo.
If I could have anybody take something away from this experience, is that we need to take care of our people. We need to take care of the veterans who have kind of gone through this potentially horrifying, maybe not necessarily physically, but even psychologically and emotionally experiences. And there needs to be more back-end care.
And Specialist Sharon Byrne, a chemical operations specialist soldier.
You know, 10 years ago probably would have been a good time to cut our losses. Additional 10 years that we held on thinking that we could really accomplish something, and then for it to end the way it did, this is very disappointing.
On this 20th anniversary of the events of September 11th and the wars that followed, the Coin Podcast Network presents A Generation at War.
We've been a nation too long at war. If you're 20 years old today, you've never known an America at peace.
So first, I just wanted to kick off and ask, you know, where are you from? Are you from Oregon?
I was actually born in Brazil, and I got to the United States when I was around 19, 20 years old. I got married with my son's mom from Idaho. As soon as I got my green card, I started thinking that one way I could show the American community that I really want to help, it was joining the military.
Where do you live now?
I live in Portland, Oregon.
I was in Corvallis, Oregon. That's where I grew up.
I'm in Portland, Oregon. Actually, I graduated from Corvallis High School in 2001.
I am born and raised in Portland, mainly grew up in Hillsboro.
Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America.
Walk me through, what was it like in your life when you decided that you wanted to join the military?
Honestly, 9/11 is actually what made me want to join the military. I was a freshman in high school when it happened, and it was a really emotional day when I saw everything happening. It made me feel like I needed to serve a purpose, and putting on the uniform made me fulfill that purpose, I feel.
So you remember going to class then? On that day.
I do.
What was the environment like around the school?
It was very sad and quiet. It just wasn't a normal day. Everybody was kind of just trying to see and hear. And we had family members. We had several students over there that had family members that lived in New York at the time. And so it was just an emotional day.
What do you remember about when you walked in the recruiting office the first day?
I was terrified. I've never been away from my family, and it was a huge step that nobody in my family had done since my grandpa was drafted. So it was just it was honestly terrifying to me.
Where were you, and do you remember what you were doing on September 11th, 2001?
Yes, I was in high school, and I was watching. It was I think it was, for a lot of people, was like, wow, what is going on right now? And it just shocked me to see that. First few minutes, I didn't believe it was real. I thought it was just something going on in New York. But at the end of the day, we were always speechless around my house, my family, like, what's happening? The feeling of feeling unsafe in our own home, it just became a big part of our life. And then when I joined the Marine Corps, one of the reasons was for this. I want to make sure that whatever happened to in September 11 never happened again. And that's the feeling I think a lot of kids in high school had it. And that's how it took me to join the military.
So you would say that September 11th did influence your decision to join at least a little bit?
Yes, it did. It did a lot. It was my first year in high school, and I think affected everybody, you know, in every school level. We just felt unsafe until the moment. We never, ever thought something like that would happen. And when it happened, I think it changed a little bit of inside of everybody that lived in anywhere.
I was one of the first boot camp classes after 9/11 happened. I actually signed on to join the military back in May, back when I was still a senior in high school. And originally, I saw the card somewhere, but I have a card that says I was supposed to fly out on 9/11. But that didn't end up happening. I ended up flying out, I think, the 16th. Of September, and I was the first boot camp class into Navy boot camp after 9/11 happened. I mean, obviously, it's one of those situations where there's this hard line, kind of like before and after. Like, here's what your life was before 9/11 in the military. Here's what your life is after 9/11 in the military.
I had heard that you actually enlisted shortly before 9/11. Was that right?
Yeah. September 11th happened while I was in basic training. So I signed up during peacetime. And before I got out of training, we were at war. So I know where I was when I first heard it. In basic training, we're not allowed to have any cell phone or TVs or radio, very limited contact with the outside world. It's very isolated. I was doing a hand-to-hand combat training when the drill sergeants let us know what happened. Yeah, we thought it was just a scare tactic. And it wasn't until a couple days later that the drill sergeants realized that none of us were taking it seriously, that they actually drug out a TV in front of the company and showed us the news. And that's when it really hit home that this is real. And in fact, because of where I was when I heard it, I didn't even fully grasp everything that had happened until years later, you know, watching, you know, like the 10-year anniversary shows where they're, you know, discussing what happened. And that was actually, in a lot of cases, my first look at a lot of the footage that most of America had already seen. When I first learned that the attacks on September 11th were real, that definitely brought it home. And I realized that, you know, this was no longer, you know, a peacetime exercise to get college money. I originally joined just for the college benefits, not being able to afford college on my own. And once September 11th happened and I realized that I'm now in an active duty army in, you know, wartime.
This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace.
How accurate do you think your preconceptions of the Marine Corps were compared to what you were doing?
I know a lot of TV shows and a lot of movies talk about the brotherhood and the family, but it's so much more than that. I never forget every training I would go to, every climb, every mountain we would climb and go up to. I was never feeling unsafe. I was never feeling sorry for us for being doing a hike or doing the mission. Because I knew I had that feeling, the security that if I felt, somebody was going to pick me up. And sometimes in life, we don't have that feeling. A lot of times in life, we walk through so many paths in life and we're always, oh my gosh, what if I fail? What if this happened? But when you're in the Marine Corps, you can always fall on the ground. You can get hurt because somebody's going to pick you up. You're never alone. You're never left behind. But I know everybody talk about this, but it's so much deeper than what we see on TV and read on books. Is so big about the brotherhood.
When you think back to your early time as a Marine, what was your day-to-day experience like?
Every day goes by the book. We have a time for everything. We have a task for everything. And that's something I believe that changes everybody's life, how you do everything by the book. And that was a big deal for me. And now I understand why a lot of companies like to hire veterans, because we follow policies and regulations and make sure every day something is done at the same exactly way they should be done. And that's something I lived in the Marine Corps. Every day we knew what to do, we knew where to go, we knew what we were doing. And that's one thing that really changes us in our soul and our heart.
Our first day of basic training, it was flew into Chicago, took a bus to Great Lakes. And as soon as we got off the bus, because everybody was still in this high state of alert, high state of worried about the potential threats, we were met by armed security and dogs going through all of our bags. So this was like middle of the night. It's dark outside and we go outside and we have to line up and dogs are searching us and they're armed guards, making sure everybody is who they say they are. So it was pretty intense.
In the months ahead, our patience will be one of our strengths. Patience in understanding that it will take time to achieve our goals. Patience in all the sacrifices that may come. Today, those sacrifices are being made by members of our armed forces who now defend us so far from home.
I actually went straight to a deployment in Iraq.
So what part of Iraq were you in?
Al-Asad, the Al-Asad Air Base, 2009.
And what was the environment like when you landed, boots on the ground in Al-Asad?
Rushed.
It seems like it must have all happened so fast.
It did. You kind of just landed and everybody was trying to figure out where they're supposed to go. And it was honestly kind of just like basic training all over again, trying to figure out another world. It was very hot and I don't even know how to describe it. It's just, it's a lot of sand. I think honestly, the first time it was really like the biggest difference was when one of the sandstorms came and it's like the sky just all of a sudden turned red. And then you didn't even have enough time to get into a shelter before it just hit you. And we got into a vehicle and it just even got through just little cracks in the vehicle and was still hitting us in the face. And so I'd say that was the biggest shock to me. It was like, wow, this is a little different.
And how old were you when you arrived in Iraq?
22.
You were 22.
Yeah.
Nothing in life could have prepared you necessarily for that.
No.
So tell me about some people that stood out to you, and how would you explain the overall attitude of the people toward the U.S. and the American military?
I think it just differed in the areas you were. A lot of areas liked that we were there. They'd come and wave to us. The kids would always come out and they always wanted like our honey buns and all the treats and stuff that you get. So they'd come out and wave. And then, I mean, you always had the areas where it was very uncomfortable and they really didn't want us there.
Was it surprising when you went there and you met the people?
I'd have to say so. I thought it was going to be a lot more hostile. I thought that nobody really wanted us there, but honestly, the culture was great. The people who lived and worked around us were awesome and friendly.
When you first deployed to Afghanistan, can you walk me through what were you thinking?
When we were, my civil affairs group got told we were deploying, it was actually something, an incredible feeling, because that's when we start like pre-deployment training, understanding the culture, learning the language. And I remember when we stepped foot on the ground, you see Marines going in and Marines that were already there for 7-8 months going home. And I could see their faces. They were all like completely different people than I ever saw. And in the first few days over there, you're really scared. And you don't tell anybody. You keep that for yourself. First few days, first few weeks are crucial because it's when you start losing the fear. So everything that we study and learn, sometimes everything that we watch or read in books is completely different than when we're living there.
We ask a lot of those who wear our uniform. We ask them to leave their loved ones, to travel great distances, to risk injury, even to be prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice of their lives.
Can you point to a specific moment after you arrived in Iraq where you thought, oh, this is real. The person sitting next to me could very well die on our mission.
Yeah, we were getting ready to leave out on our first mission with the crew that was already there that was kind of training us up on the routes and what we were doing. And it was just surreal, like, okay, it's go time. You don't realize once we got on the road, it became real because it was, okay, now all that training's kicking in and you're watching everything and you realize like if something happens, you could have somebody else's life in your line. And it's just, your heart starts racing pretty good.
When I found out that my unit was actually being deployed and they actually got shipped off, that was a real wake up moment. And I do remember a lot more people, you know, taking more time to say goodbye to their fellow soldiers, as opposed to just, well, it's been good and let's keep in touch. It was, I think everybody knew in the bottom of their heart that this was different and these goodbyes could be permanent.
Did you have any moments where you thought this is real and now all of a sudden your service isn't in theory, it's in application?
When we go as civil affairs, we live with the Afghan people. We are not just around military people. We are in a fire team of between 4 to 7 Marines and a corpsman, and we're living there. So when we start living the Afghanistan life, it's something that really shocked me because you don't even think that they don't have any restroom. You don't even think they don't have clean water. They don't have electricity. Everything that we have here, they don't have it there. Sometimes we would see people doing necessities and in the streets and things like that. And that was the part that really shocked me, how miserable and how fragile and how weak and poor they were, that we have no idea how it is living here and just watching on TV or reading books. So that's something that really hit me, was like, wow, we are lucky. We got a good life.
To all the men and women of the United States Armed Forces now in the Middle East, the peace of a troubled world and the hopes of an oppressed people now depend on you.
I mean, I'm a cook, so we get up at 1:30 in the morning and cook breakfast, and then we start dinner again at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think we probably get about 2 hours of sleep a night if we're lucky. So I think we've embraced the suck quite a bit when it comes to sleep and lack of, probably too many to even describe.
Civil affairs Marines, their missions are, your mission was to do what? Was to build infrastructure?
Civil affairs, our mission was to make sure they could have business, help the economy, everything else. So that's why we became a very big target for the enemy. We build schools because education is a big part of not having terrorists. A lot of times they don't know how to read or write. We brought internet access. We were just trying to spread education to make sure they took the right path, that they understood that some things that they were told by the Taliban were not correct. We want to build a school. We want to build a clinic. We want to build wells so you can recognize that this is your government. We're here just to help them. Nobody else is. You should not be joining any terrorists. We're going to provide you jobs. It's one of the biggest reasons that people became Taliban over there is because that's the only source of income sometimes. That's the only job they can get.
What was that day-to-day experience like contributing to the war effort?
You know, it was different. I felt bad not being able to support my fellow soldiers, you know, on the front lines. But I realized that, you know, what I was doing was just as necessary. You know, the correspondence with the family members of the deployed soldiers, that was probably the biggest thing that I had to do, or the most difficult task I had to do. Because, of course, you know, they want all the answers. They want to know why their loved one hasn't received mail, or they haven't received mail from their loved one. You know, and you got to understand that, you know, earlier on in this war, it would take months to get packages and mail back and forth from the soldiers. And so that was definitely the most difficult part of all of that, was keeping the family members happy.
When we come back, we'll talk about the messaging of the global war on terror and find out if our four veterans feel like it matched their actual mission.
The town of Detroit, it is almost completely burned out. There's one or two restaurants that have been saved. For all intents and purposes, this town is gone.
A year of fire
and ice
and heat.
116 Oregonians have now died as a result of the state's recent heat wave.
Three deadly weather events that made international headlines.
But what is the connection to climate change?
I think Mother Nature is very mad at humans.
Now, the COIN Podcast Network is going beyond the headlines.
The crises we're going to be facing from climate change are really going to balloon and intersect with other crises.
Deep into a discussion about our changing climate,
the danger it poses to all of us,
and what you can do about it.
We better start doing something about it real soon.
People are just not prepared for this.
It is a climate in crisis, now streaming on the COIN Podcast Network.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
Welcome back. 20 years is a long time to fight a war. The United States campaign in Afghanistan is the longest war in American history. And we wanted to know if over those two decades, the veterans we talked to understood the mission and believed in it.
Would you say that you were and or are a believer in the U.S. mission in the Middle East, specifically Afghanistan and Iraq?
Initially, definitely. I think that our original reasons for going into Iraq and Afghanistan were, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. You know, it's hard because, of course, going into the Middle East right after being attacked, you know, we now, you know, we're looking for, you know, to hold those accountable that attacked us and killed our people. And I felt like that was a very honorable mission. We, of course, heard later on concerning, you know, going into Iraq, you know, the weapons of mass destruction. Well, maybe that was bad intelligence and it wasn't really true. And so there's a lot of questions on whether or not going into Iraq was maybe the proper thing to do. Regardless of our motivations for going into it, I think we learned a lot in this war. Because it wasn't a specific country or government that we were after. It was this, you know, Al-Qaeda who is kind of, you know, is everywhere.
What were you told was the original end game? What was the exit strategy?
At that point, it was getting Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. We're going to go comb the sands and the mountains, and we will find these people and bring them to justice and eradicate this evil that is in that land.
When you landed in Iraq, I know that things are generally on a need-to-know basis. And sometimes the youngest soldiers don't get told everything that's, you know, about the mission. But what were you told about the end game, about the exit strategy, about anything like that?
Nothing really. We were just there to win over the hearts and minds. And I feel like we did a pretty good job while we were there.
When you landed, when you got off the plane, what were you told was the exit strategy? What was the end game?
We never ask questions, you know, and we never really think about the future. We think about what the mission that's given this week, this day. What are the tasks now? What do I need to do now? So we don't really ask those questions. And, you know, a lot of the military guys you talk to, you know, you should ask the least questions you can. Just do what you're told. I never, ever tried to ask what was the future and what was the exit strategy.
With your background and your different perspective, would you say that you were a believer in the U.S. mission in the Middle East, specifically Afghanistan?
Well, when I went in, I didn't know what the mission was.
So when you got out of boot camp, it wasn't like, here's the manual, here's the exit strategy, here's the end game.
No, there was none of that. There was just a, you know, this is what your job is going to be. It is still very significantly important because now there's all these more significant threats that we didn't realize at the time. And somebody who has to know radars is going to be perhaps even more significant than it was, because you might recall before 9/11, there was a bombing on what was called the USS Cole in the Middle East, where it was a fishing vessel basically sidled up to a Navy ship and exploded. So early warning at that time, you know, they really stressed the importance of understanding the potential threats that there are out there. I remember the first time I came back from A school, they lined us up and asked what the current military mission was. And only one guy realized, only one guy knew the name of it. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, something Eagle, I think, but the first push into Afghanistan. And we didn't even know what was going on at the time. At the time, I really didn't want to form an opinion, just because I didn't think that me personally having a political opinion on it was going to be any kind of way beneficial to me. Like, I knew I had a job, and I knew if I was ordered to go someplace, that would be my position.
To all the men and women of the United States Armed Forces now in the Middle East, the peace of a troubled world and the hopes of an oppressed people now depend on you. That trust is well placed.
Tell me about some of the Afghans that you met when you were there, and how would you explain their overall attitude toward the United States and the American military?
Actually, the locals, since I was in contact with a lot of tribes, they always liked us there because they knew they were safe. They knew they had security. But they always told us, and we never believed them, that if one day we left, everything was going to go back to what it was. And we're like, no, we're training army and police here. You're going to be okay. They were always happy that we were there, but they were always afraid. But their fear is very deep into their soul and heart. You know, I saw tribes that we walked in, and the Taliban had been there 2-3 days before us, and they kill people in the public places, in the bazaars, and just leave them hanging there with no arms, no legs, just so the community can see what's going to happen to them if they do anything against the Taliban. So when you build that fear into their soul and their heart, it was really hard.
When we come back, we're talking about the scars of a 2-decade war. And in the end, if our 4 veterans think it was all worth it.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin 6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
Hello, Coin 6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily 6. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's 6 biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have The Daily 6 sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
My fellow Americans, the war in Afghanistan is now over.
Welcome back. It's been 2 decades since terrorists knocked down the World Trade Center and triggered America's longest war. Our veterans came home changed, with scars, and in the end, questions about whether or not it was all worth it.
You know, I came home and started to transition, and being a civilian is a lot different. You don't have anybody to report to and tell you what you're doing for the day.
Would you say that your time in Iraq made you grow up?
Absolutely.
How were you different Absolutely. When you came back? And maybe this doesn't always have to revolve around what you think of yourself, but I'm sure that people, your friends, your family had assessments of their own.
They did. I lost a lot of friends. Coming home, like I said, it's such a change. I think being over there and then coming here, you realize how much more to respect people and how to treat people. I know that while I was over there, just the simplest hello, good morning was a huge thing. And, you know, we don't think about that stuff here. It's, you know, yeah, whatever. I think I just matured quite a bit. Gained a lot of respect for people and really didn't want to go out and do a lot of these dumb things. I wasn't a big partier, and it was more of, okay, now I need to get my career going, and made me focus a lot more.
Sure. The differences of being home and over there, how you've grown as a person, what it was like coming back.
I would say that my opinion has definitely matured. When I was younger, it was definitely a little more like just go with the flow. And now I've progressed, and, you know, I understand things a little bit more. So I think just in a general, I think seeing what it's like over there and coming home, realizing how grateful I am for what I have.
When you came home, what was the homecoming like?
It was actually amazing. When we were coming back from that commercial flight from Kyrgyzstan to Germany, and then was Germany to United States, we stopped in Maryland. That was the first stop. And when the pilot said, "Marines, welcome. Now you're flying over United States of America." That was like the biggest relief I ever had in my life, knowing that we were flying over U.S. territory. And that was so great. It was a great feeling. It was really, really good. And then, of course, when we got home, it was way better because I had my whole family waiting for me. But that feeling of the people in Maryland waiting for us in the airport and that pilot that mentioned that, that was amazing.
War leaves its mark on everyone. What scars, mental or physical, did you come home with?
So I think one of the biggest ones is it hard to sleep. So I take some kind of medication to help me sleep through the night. And because I don't know if it's the training or just the, what we see over there. But when we come back completely different. But I think every Marine you're going to talk to, we got scars, but we're not sorry. We're proud. I'm proud of my scars because that means we did something for the country, for the community.
I actually think there was a lot of support. The support our troops became a thing earlier on when people were against the war, but didn't want to be against the troops. You know, they still want to support the troops and for what the, you know, they're doing.
It was getting off a train and meeting my parents and going out for Chinese. My friends and family say I didn't change all that much from pre-military to post-military. It kind of felt like coming back from college, maybe. You know, obviously, I don't think that military members face the same kind of post-Vietnam experience, because I think there's still that underlying appreciation and underlying patriotism from, especially as a holdover from 9/11. But my experience was, you know, coming home and basically returning to my family and moving on with my life, which a lot of other people haven't had that opportunity, unfortunately. But there wasn't any like ticker tape parade or anything. It was just kind of like, okay, I'm back.
I'm sure that your time in the service left a mark on you.
Yeah, I think I am glad that I served. I think that it set me up well for a lot of the good things that have happened to me since. I think that coming out of high school, I was just kind of like not sure what I was going to do. I didn't have a good sense of discipline. I'm pretty sure if I'd gone to college, I probably just would have ended up wasting a lot of time and money. It gave me a much stronger sense of self.
I don't think enough people understand how much we have asked of the 1% of this country who put that uniform on, willing to put their lives on the line in defense of our nation.
And so tell me about your experience after coming home.
When you get out the military, you have a lot of support, but you are lost inside of you. You don't know what to do. You want to find some kind of brotherhood again. You want to belong to a group that's similar to the military. And it's hard to find as a civilian, really hard to find. So I see the struggle with veterans when they get out and after war, is that we are always trying to find something that we belong to.
And you're a teacher now, I believe that you had said. So what do you teach now?
I ended up becoming a journalist. I was a photojournalist for a couple of local newspapers for close to a decade. And then I got my teaching degree and moved to Eugene. And nowadays I teach photography and media literacy.
Now, is this the ending of a 20-year conflict in Afghanistan? And not just that it's ending, but the way that it has unfolded. This is something that you hope to bring up to your students, at least somehow?
I'm not sure how I'll bring it up to students, if I will. I mean, I could potentially, but I haven't got any kind of specific plan for it. If I do end up doing current events, that might come up, because this is one of those things where, you know, as a journalist, you know, this is the conflict might have ended, but the story hasn't. This is going to continue being part of the zeitgeist for, you know, years, because not only because of the veterans' experience and PTSD and issues there, but also refugees and other potential issues. So it's going to continue to crop up in our nation's history and news for years to come. So it's going to be kind of a do our best to explain the context and help kids understand the history behind it too. Because there's a lot of history to it, not just these 20 years.
So when I hear that we could have, should have continued the so-called low-grade effort in Afghanistan at low risk to our service members, at low cost, we've been a nation too long at war.
Did you ever think that a situation with the withdrawal would unfold like this?
If we had a fixed military base there, we could hold hands with them and help the army and the police to be standing strong. But just taking everybody out, I can see how the fear of seeing those bodies hanging out around the tribes from the Taliban, it got to them. That's why when they saw those scenes with people trying to grab an airplane, it didn't really surprise me, because what kind of death is better? The death of falling of an airplane or the death by the Taliban hanging on the tribe, being cut your arm and leg very slow so you don't die, but you have a lot of pain. What kind of death is the least worst death? I think, in my personal opinion, as a civilian now, if we should have kept some kind of base or structure there, it would help them to be stronger. But just leaving them like that, I completely understand the fear they have, because they always had a fear. You know, when we were there, we knew we were keeping the United States safe. In my perspective, as a Marine that was there, we were keeping Taliban in check. We were keeping them in their hole, hiding whatever they were doing. We were making sure Al-Qaeda was not around anymore. But now my concerns are, what is going to happen now?
I thought it would be a lot more organized. Although I'm in full support of us pulling out of Afghanistan, I think that, like you said, we've been talking about it for a decade. It did not have to be this chaotic, messy, rushed, last minute thing, you know, leaving so many Americans and American allies behind and in danger.
I remember when I was originally thinking about it, thinking that, you know, that kind of withdrawal would create a vacuum, create a force vacuum, basically. And whoever stepped up is going to be, you know, the next big player in the area. I think a lot of people are going to see it kind of the same way. Like I've seen it said that this is kind of like our Saigon moment of this generation, of all these people had these life-changing experiences and encounters. So it's something I haven't parsed that specifically. And I had a feeling you were going to ask me about it, but I haven't had too much of a chance to really analyze my own feelings for it, other than the fact that I feel like we could do a better job to help the people who've helped us. I've read stories about the interpreters and the allies that we've formed over there, and how a lot of them are feeling kind of like hung out to dry and abandoned. And I wish we could do more to help. I'm sure it could be handled better, but I wish I knew how it could have been handled better too.
The war on terror is always going to be kind of a losing battle because it's not specific enough. You know, there's so many people out there that are looking to harm us and others. And I feel like our initial reasons for going into war kind of ballooned out into this overarching war on terror, trying to bring peace to the Middle East in general. And it just got away from us. So I think that us pulling out now, even though I don't necessarily agree with the actual method in which we pulled out, I think it was the right call. I think that we kind of lost focus somewhere in there and needed to pull it back home. Yeah, there's a lot of loss of life and PTSD, loss of limbs, the toll that war takes. And I feel like we should have done it better.
This will not be a campaign of half measures, and we will accept no outcome but victory.
Now that the Taliban is back in control, there's a lot of fear. The same phrase I keep hearing over and over again, which is all for nothing. It's all for nothing. Is that sentiment understandable?
I don't think we do. I don't think it's all for nothing. I feel that we've done a lot of great things and we've been there and helped them progress. I feel like anybody would hope that the withdrawal, they'd be able to sustain and take care of what they were hoping to get out of us being there. So it's hard to see it happening again. There's always going to be hard times, but we're still there to support them.
You know, everything we do, you know, there's cause and effect. You know, everything we do has some effect, whether positive or negative. So saying it was all for nothing may be a little harsh, because those women, for example, that over the last 20 years were able to get an education and be more independent and more liberal thinking, you know, just because the Taliban is coming over, taking over and probably going to put a stop to that, those women still now have that education. They still now have that, they had that taste of freedom. And I think that it's extremely tragic that they're now losing that freedom after having that taste. And so in that sense, yeah, it was kind of for nothing. You gave them a taste of freedom and now they're getting ripped away from them.
I can understand that sentiment. I mean, feeling like the rug has been basically torn out from under you. You've basically invested in a system that is no longer likely to stick around. But I can't think it's all for nothing. You know, I think about Malala Yousafzai, where she was a result of the kind of like the Taliban regime, but she has made significant gains and significant changes just in her time. And hopefully, my hope, I guess, is that people, if they've experienced a system that they like, that's maybe the seed of something for the future. I suppose that's, I don't know. I hope it's not for nothing. I hope that it can result in something stronger, result in something that was beneficial to someone in the future. Maybe, I don't know.
I think now, today more than ever, after the casualties we just had it there, the sadness took part of our heart and soul. And I don't think I can really think if it was worth or not, because now if you start thinking about September 11th, we're going to leave Afghanistan to be a playground for terrorists. They're going to be able to train, they're going to be able to recruit, they're going to be able to do everything again. And that's what scares me the most, is that unfortunately we're going to leave that playground open for them. So I don't think it was for nothing. I think we did get some really bad guys for a while. But now my concern is, from now on, are we going to let them build up an army?
It's sad that we built up the Afghan army and trained them in order to protect themselves, hold their own. And then as soon as we left, they weren't able to do that. But you never know. I mean, maybe another 5, 10, 20 years, there might be enough people that still have that influence left over from the 20 years that we were involved that decide to stand up and take their country back themselves.
The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
What does the media miss about service? What questions don't we ask that perhaps we should be asking our service members?
I think probably the thing that I understood people being more frustrated with is that, you know, as media, a lot of times, I know I was guilty of this, I'd come in with kind of a preconceived notion of what the story is going to be. That can create a certain amount of confirmation bias of, you know, you're going to want to talk to the people who had the similar experience that goes along with the narrative that you're pursuing, which isn't going to be everybody's experience. And sometimes the narrative that we pursue is not always going to be the narrative that is going to be true of the situation.
I think it gets generalized quite a bit. Every soldier is different, just like every civilian is different. So when you live your day-to-day, like asking, this may be your opinion, other people feel the other way. And maybe just opening ears to each other is like my biggest thing, is just hear what the other person's saying. Just because they have a different opinion than you have doesn't mean that you can't find a common ground. Not every soldier agrees with everything, and not every civilian agrees. So I think it's just learning how to communicate, I guess, with the person maybe you're talking to.
For people that are listening, you know, we really shouldn't think of the military as one entity, but rather a team of many different individuals.
Yeah. I grew up through the military in a totally different manner. And like the soldiers I have now, I have to work with them differently because change, the world changes. We all have to change. And sometimes it just takes some getting used to.
I think what frustrates a lot of the military members is that some things are dramatized or take out of the picture, or, you know, details that are very important are left outside because for them, it doesn't matter. For example, all the hearts and minds that we did there, that was the whole goal. The mission was never to kill. The mission was help to stop the Taliban, and stopping Taliban, it doesn't mean killing. You know, it can be stopping recruiting. It was helping understanding that the only way they join Taliban is because there is no jobs, there is no money there. So we were helping out those projects. And a lot of times I noticed that those subjects are left on the side. They don't talk about it. They talk about how many casualties, because they may get more attention, but a lot of times the good things are not spread. So I think sometimes the feeling we get is that a lot of things that we do there are not taken for consideration.
On September 11th, 2001, in our time of grief, the American people came together. On that day, no matter where we came from, what God we prayed to, or what race or ethnicity we were united as one American family.
If you could say one thing to the new generation of soldiers, of Marines, of sailors, airmen, what would you say?
Being able to take that oath and commit yourself to something, even if it's for the shortest time, is something a lot of people can't do. And to step in and be able to do that, I think is commendable. I won't say heroic, but I think it's a thing that a lot of people won't do. And if you can do it, and even if you can just go long term with it, then that's even better.
Do you have anything that you would like to say to both current service members and Afghans who are in country right now?
I just want to thank everybody, you know, for the spirit, for the commitment, whoever is a former military or actually in the military right now. Everybody's job is very important. They will realize that later. You know, sometimes when we're in uniform, we don't realize how important it is.
I think probably if I could have anybody take something away from this experience, is that we need to take care of our people. We need to take care of the veterans who have kind of gone through this potentially horrifying, maybe not necessarily physically, but even psychologically and emotionally experiences. And there needs to be more back-end care for the people who've gone through these traumatic experiences. Part of the deal is we shouldn't be trying to get into conflicts if we're still not able to take care of the people who are damaged from or conflicted or traumatized by the last one. Now, that's another lesson I'd like us to have to take forward.
I feel like when we first went to war in Afghanistan, you know, there was a justifiable reason. I felt like that was an honorable cause. And during my time in service, I maintained that. 20 years later, however, things have changed. And as I mentioned earlier, I feel like the war kind of got away from us and we probably should have pulled out a while ago. And so seeing what it's become is sad. I think less about, you know, reflecting back on my time in the military and really think about all those people who actually were deployed and lost limbs or lost their lives or lost their brothers and sisters or comrades. I feel like they were, I don't want to say cheated, but I feel worse for them. And I feel like they definitely got the raw end of the deal. Like I said, initially, I was all gung-ho about going to war to get, you know, justice for what happened during September 11th and wipe out this evil in the desert. And 20 years later, all this information comes to light and we start seeing the big picture. And it makes me question real motivations, you know, for our government and why we do what we do and the reasons they're giving us as the American people. And so I've been a lot more critical and scrutinize decisions that I hear about when, you know, when I read the news. I'm paying more attention to politics and hoping that we can maybe avoid making these same mistakes in the future.
For the first time since the dust settled around two fallen towers, the United States is not at war in Afghanistan. And while most of us will never forget the events of 9/11, those who fought in the war on terror will never forget the 20 years since. The Coin Podcast Network and I want to thank the four veterans who shared their stories with us. Sergeant First Class Elizabeth Stewart, a culinary NCO in the Oregon National Guard. Lance Corporal Alex Danielli, a former Civil Affairs Marine. Specialist Sharon Byrne, an Army veteran. And Jesse Scobo, a Navy cryptologist. And thank all who made the sacrifice to serve our nation.
The Coin Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.